The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
Actor Riz Ahmed has spoken recently about how British spies tried to recruit him on three separate occasions. He found the surprise approaches as both hilarious and comedic, and I suppose in deference to his patriotic duty, went on to tell people about them, which I suppose the spy agency wasn't too happy with. So is the only way into the world of espionage to be headhunted, and what are the skills required? To share expertise, I'm joined by the Assistant Professor of International Relations at the University of Nottingham, Dr. Dan Lomas. Good morning, Dan.
Morning. Thanks for having me on.
What do you need to have to be a successful spy?
Well, in the traditional world, people often see kind of being well-spoken, you know, the cliches around Bond and all that kind of stuff. But I think, you know, the heart of it all, you just need to be a people person. You need, you know, the ability to speak to someone normally. You need to be conscious of, you know, feelings and kind of almost, you know, just be invested in an individual. So I think at the very heart of it is kind of just the human instinct of just, you know, being a people person.
Yeah, well, we all like to think we're people. But at the same time, you have to report back to your superior. So are you listening out for certain cues? Are you looking for certain information?
Well, I guess it depends on what we want here. So if you're an intelligence officer, so the officer is the person who's officially employed by the service and paid by them, then you are looking at running individual agents. You're kind of out there looking to pick up, as in this case, potentially people who, you know, don't necessarily are able to penetrate kind of high-level organizations, but they're able to keep an ear out and pass minor bits of information on. If you're an agent, so you're the person who's being recruited, there's a whole range of kind of motivations, I guess, why you'd do this. Patriotic duty, cash, all sorts of reasons for this. But if you're a low-level informer, you're just looking for personal information, little bits of information that might be useful later on for someone else to use to recruit other individuals.
But is it not inherently risky if you are spying, or you are there having the conversation with the prince of whoever in front of you, and you're kind of, you know, taking mental notes to tell your handler afterwards? Is there not a risk that you might end up in the slammer, or worse, because the person who you are spying on might take offence?
Well, yeah, I mean, there are certain countries out there that spying does carry significant penalties and a long jail time. You know, we're not in the world of genteel spy swaps during the Cold War. And it does carry a lot of risk. There are, you know, a large number of agents, and we know this from media reporting in places like Iran, China, or even Russia, where the death sentence has been passed on individuals. So it does carry significant risks, and it does require, you know, an element of being quite ballsy in terms of kind of some of the tenacity and the skills that you have. So people undertaking this sometimes know the risks they're potentially taking, but they're willing to override that because they might have a patriotic duty to do this, or they might hate the system that they live in, or they might just want, you know, a big payout.
Yeah, well, you see, that's it. It's financial is key here. But like everything else, we were talking about the rise of AI earlier on. I'm not sure how good AI is as a spy, but I would like to think that rather than, you know, tap up a B-list actor who might have an interesting conversation somewhere, I just hack into someone's phone instead. I mean, that would be much more efficient. Is that how MI6 and these organisations are operating these days?
What you do in the real world is you're using multiple sources against the target. So you might be hacking a phone, you might be listening into someone's communications, but at the same time, potentially you could be running agents to try and penetrate certain networks and organizations. The people you're trying to collect intelligence on are still relatively smart, so they might adopt anti-tech ways of communication, so use notes or voices. And in that case, it requires you to use human agents. So to use traditional spies. And I guess with the rise of AI, yes, you are seeing the tech environment changing, but humans are just as gullible as we were, you know, 2,000-3,000 years ago. So the same techniques of kind of money, ideology, recruitment, ego, still work today. So I think, you know, recruiting a tech expert who's involved in the AI industry would again be a really good kind of source of information and give you a new element of insight.
I think that it's probably never going to be as glamorous as it is portrayed in the films. I mean, look, for me, if you're to pick out the best type of spy that has ever been out there, the character called Ned Broy, who would have been Michael Collins' man in Dublin Castle during the War of Independence, who went on to become the Garda Commissioner subsequently. You know, the stuff that he was up to, giving information out against the British government to the IRA at the time, it was stuff of legend. You think of everything that happened during the Second World War between the Allies, and then the Cold War between the East and the West. I mean, is it all a little bit dull these days? Is it not as kind of clandestine as it used to be? Because people tend to wear their heart in their sleeves a lot more.
We know from leaks in the US and reporting, for example, that Western intelligence before the invasion of Ukraine had a good understanding of what the Russians were doing, in part because they had human reporting in and around Moscow. We know these days that both the CIA and MI6 are using online systems to encourage spies in China, Russia, Iran, and elsewhere to provide information to us. So there is a value there. And if you look at what's happening in the Middle East, you know, you have Israel's intelligence security community services, Mossad, are able to recruit significant numbers of Iranians to pass on information that can then be used for targeting purposes. So you are still seeing that quiet flow of information from individuals, but we can't necessarily see it. We might see kind of the tip of the iceberg as a story kind of comes into the open, but we don't really see the day-to-day nitty-gritty work of the intelligence and security community. But the examples you cite from history are kind of really illustrative of the types of activities that happen now. But nowadays, you've got a source in Dublin Castle, but then you're also adding a smartphone into the equation that feeds up information flows. So the techniques are exactly the same.
Yeah, but the technology has probably made it a little bit easier because people are a bit more stupid. When you look at what's happening in the US right now and the current administration and how they run things, I'm presuming there are intelligence agents buckled with laughter getting access to information from the likes of Pete Hegseth and Stephen Miller and others.
Well, you can just read the newspaper headlines of the Washington Post and the New York Times to see kind of insider leaks on what people think about the status of the FBI, the CIA, and other parts of the US intelligence community. I think what you see in the US is that, I think if I was an agent potentially thinking of working for the US, I'd be thinking, well, is my information going to potentially be leaked? Or if I pass information on to the US administration that's negative and goes against kind of Trump policy, would I essentially believed and would the risk I'd be taking be valued enough? And if it's not, then I'd probably go to another agency that is linked, that has been historically linked to the CIA, because my information might be more valued there. So you might go to kind of a British or European intelligence service and pass your information on.
Yeah, have you seen what they've done now? Could that possibly be true? Yeah, you'd need a second ear on that, I would imagine, for a lot of things. Dr. Dan Lomas, Assistant Professor of International Relations at the University of Nottingham. Thank you.
The Clare Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.